welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And your campaign begins today. And the whole point of our campaign, your campaign, my campaign, as a matter of fact, let me take a quick second to try to dive up or to try to go back to the fact I announced a few, maybe a month or two ago, that I'm running, I'm planning on putting my name in to become president of the United States, but I'm not doing it via the popular vote unconstitutional popular vote process. What I am doing is I'm encouraging you to run a campaign in becoming an elector via the constitutional process. In other words, instead of seeing Trump, and let's come up with a couple of other really, actually, it won't be Trump, it'll be some other sorry name, and I say sorry because none of these people understand the Constitution. The reason we are literally being tossed to and fro by liberal tyranny and conservative tyranny is due to the fact that nobody understands the Constitution and nobody's holding anybody accountable. Thus, our campaign. We need to start actually holding people accountable and demanding compliance to the Constitution. Folks, unless you start speaking up, it's game over. They're moving us towards game over. I'm not even sure if we have much time, even if we can get through this Trump presidency. Let's not forget, he was either complacent or he was a part of the COVID pandemic. They announced that they had been working up to this point. This was scheduled to happen. Even Fauci said it would happen. So we have to start understanding. We need to start demanding. This is why our campaigns begin today. And so I have been remiss in reminding you to encourage you to run a campaign to become an elector. What does that mean? That means that all you have to do is call your Secretary of State and say, I am planning in 2028... I am planning in running a campaign to become an elector for this congressional district. And actually explain to the Secretary of State that per the Constitution, we the people are to choose our electors, not the president, and that you're basically telling the Secretary of State not to put any presidential names on the ballot, and ergo, we will put presidential names on, not presidential names, electors for the people, because it's the electors who are to be chosen by the people who are to choose the president. We've had, the party has had a long run, and if you read Why Counties Matter Most, at the very end of Why Counties Matter Most, and you'll actually find my talking about the electors, so just search the document for electors, and I'll place context to this. But you will actually see as we move from 1789 all the way to 1856, I believe, is the migration of actually from 1789 to basically 1826 or 28. Which was it? Let me see. John Quincy Adams was elected in 24. Yeah, so it was 28. So we would actually see that all electors were chosen by the people by that point in time. There was only one state. And the reason they took that long to finally get it right was because the people demanded choosing their electors. And at that point in time, there was no popular vote. It was all done via elector. Madison ran his election without spending a penny on his 1808 campaign, on his first presidential campaign. He didn't spend a penny on his campaign. the electors were the ones that actually did the campaigning. This was the whole intent. Right, wrong, or indifferent, they recognized that from the beginning of this republic moving forward, it would be insurmountable for any single person to be able to run a campaign across the republic. You just couldn't travel fast enough and to be in so many places at once to have an effective campaign. Ergo, they created an elector system where the electors actually ran the campaign and they would communicate to the candidates and say, I'd like to be your elector. And then they would actually run the campaign based on the platform, based on the issues that their candidates would run. And in some cases, you would have probably, because the elector had to choose two people. And in the very beginning, they had to choose two people for president. And so it wasn't really just even tied to one. These electors had to actually make the choice of who was to be president after the 12th Amendment. They had to make the choice of who was actually they wanted for president and who they wanted for vice president. But prior to that, they just chose two people for president. If we're going to follow the system and if we're going to call for and demand compliance with the Constitution, it's time we actually started running our elections in the way they needed to be run. And we have plenty of evidence. That's why counties matter most. That article, it's a mini book, but it is not daunting of a task. I think anybody can actually dive into this and you will learn. There's lots of stuff that we lay out, and I actually provide you the academic argument and from the ratification debates precisely how the electors and the electoral college was to be done. We, the people, were to choose our electors. That started in the in the Constitutional Convention, and it was equally stated and asserted in the ratification debates by the Federalists. Why is it that the states chose not to follow it? Because you got to remember that many of the states did not want to act, the state legislatures weren't happy with actually having this constitution ratified because the state legislators were bypassed. So they started, meandering, or I should say, manipulating the congressional districts. They actually started, many of the states, basically the state legislators chose the electors, which was a direct violation of the Constitution, but nobody held them accountable. See, at this point in time, there was no, and this is, so Bob Schultz has been an advocate, and that's what the We the People Foundation is trying to do, is to try to create like a fourth branch of government, but it's fourth branch of government based on We the People. Maybe I should actually ask Bob to come on to the show so he can kind of explain this. And where Bob and I differ is I believe that that fourth branch of government actually has to be accountable to the people, but it actually needs to be a part of the government. They need to actually have the ability to draw guns and say, get out of office. You have no business being here. When it's just we the people, because they hold the guns or they hold the power to call up the guns, it'll never be effective. The reason why we had to have a constitutional convention is because Continental Congress was impotent. We can't have impotent bodies in governing, regardless of how righteous the process is. Regardless how noble, how good intended, it needs to actually be a part of government. And it needs to actually be a part of government based on what we're kind of doing in Stevens County and through some of the counties in Washington State, what we're trying to get moving in Wyoming and other states, hopefully your state. These are committees where people volunteer to serve their county commissioners. And when they make these determinations, their county commissioners, if it's an overwhelming call that you need to do this, then the county commissioners are obligated. And if not, then that committee is then obligated to inform the people that we have supervisors or commissioners that aren't willing to do their job. This becomes... I just want you to understand this. This becomes the irresistible object and the immovable force aligned. Because now we actually have we the people directly involved, and now we actually have the ability for we the people to actually use we the people to start shaping and getting our government the way it should be by holding people accountable. It has to. This, we're going to get into this in today's show, in the content today, because I told you Monday what we're going to be covering. And so, and we're going to cover it, as promised. So your campaign, my campaign, it begins today. Even on the presidential front, we need to start haranguing our public servants and demanding that they give us a constitutionally compliant government. Now, if we fathom the Department of Justice, and if we actually fathom your attorney generals and so forth, if we started holding them accountable to removing people using whatever force necessary, if we have to arrest them and incarcerate them because they've just refused to vacate their office for violating their oath, then so be it. That's what we will do. Anyway, let me move on to the last obligatory and probably the most important is because his will be done. We need to appeal to heaven. We need to make sure that we articulate very precisely that we need his blessings, his help in our endeavor in getting our public servants accountable to his constitution, getting them to get into compliance to his constitution. So as we learn what that means, then we can pray and then we can act. We have to start running campaigns. We have to start holding our hands out, pointing fingers at every single public servant who is violating their oath. As Madison stated, as we've read this several times on this show, the Virginia Resolutions of 1798, every infraction must be opposed. And every person that is in office needs to be held accountable. Okay, so let me move forward on this. Now, we actually have, and we covered in one way or the other kind of this document. And on Monday, I gave you the details. And let me confirm that it's actually up there, because I told you it would be up there by the time it was broadcasted. And so, as I go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, and as I look, yes, Monday, the 7th of April, I have a very long description of what we are trying to cover on Mondays and Fridays, the content. This is a document that was forwarded to me that was given to him by a person that is promoting bypassing or actually abandoning the Constitution and trying to get the Articles of Confederation as the supreme document to guide us. In other words, the impotent, dead-letter Constitution that was unable to actually govern. So, and actually what it did was it just caused anarchy amongst the states. And so it's just a fool's errand in people trying to go down that path. There's plenty of times, and as a matter of fact, I probably need to include the Northwest Territory as a part of this. And so actually, I have to take a second here because of the necessity of covering these documents. We need to make sure we cover these things because, so I'm going to write it, Northwest Territory, so that I can actually cover it, because yours truly kind of has a forgetfulness, and if I don't write it down, I won't cover it. So I need to actually state this to cover this. Okay, so that's what it's going to be covered now. We're going to go through the Northwest Territory. I'm sorry, not the Northwest Territory. The Northwest Ordinance. What's wrong with me? Because by going through the Northwest Ordinance, I'm going to prove to you how this was superseded by the Constitution. The Northwest Ordinance basically created a very specific mechanism for Continental Congress to bring the territory, the Northwest Territory, via the Northwest Ordinance into the Union. And the states were not going to have equal footing. They were not going to have this sovereignty that all the other states per the Constitution, were going to come into the Union. And that's why the Constitution superseded them, because the Constitutional Convention deemed that all states admitted into the Union must have equal footing. So we'll cover this as well, because every document that they want to reference, we need to help you understand what they're saying is not the truth, or it is ill-informed information that they're providing. So, and sadly, there's the reason why people want to go back to these things, and it's not that these are wrong desires. What they're doing is they're doing the wrong process. The reason why people, this is becoming popular in abandoning the Constitution, because people see it's not a biblical constitution. It's not enforcing the biblical law. It doesn't have this direct tie to Christianity, when actually it is greater than that. Because the Constitution allows every person to choose for themselves to accept Christ or not. When we go down a theocracy, it is dead. In other words, when you have a theocracy, you will either be a partaker and a follower. It's just like Islam. This is the religion, and this is how you'll worship. That is antithetical to what the framers witnessed and recognized what we needed to do to avoid the wars and the oppression that comes from these types of theocracies. So let me dive into, because what we're covering today is we're covering the very first petition that was sent to King George. Now, the significance of this, let me kind of give you the backstory. Remember, on the 2nd of January, go back and listen to it, we actually read the Tory Acts. Tammy and I read the Tory Acts. And so technically, I would probably like to have Tammy, read through this with me as well, so that she could benefit from this. But bottom line, this is the very first petition written by Continental Congress to the king. And it was written, let me go to the front page. It was written in 1774, and if I remember correctly, it was October 1774 when this was written and sent. And so the men that were serving in Continental Congress came up with this petition to basically make a plea to the king. Now, I want you to remember, we actually read the Articles of Confederation. And so all of these things that I'm doing, I'm actually having to figure out where I, have these documents, because in the Articles of Confederation, we actually made that in 1777, but the Articles of Association were created in 1774, because it was the premise, it was the guide of how these representatives from the states were going to work in representing their states, their constituents. And so let me pull up the Articles of Association. This was also written October 20th, 1774. So in other words, their mission in forming Continental Congress was one to petition the king formally. So as we told you, as we were going through the Tory Acts, when the oppression began in 1760s, as a matter of fact, King George III took the throne on 1760, the year of 1760, and it was just a short time after that where he started following the guidance to start taking and putting pressure upon the American colonies to have them fund the tyranny of Britain, running the wars and all of the other things that they were doing. In other words, we were going to start paying the lion's share of funding their tyranny. So if you remember, we kind of went through how the colonists started forming these organizations, councils, committees, assemblies, when you hear people talk about jural assemblies, this as a right of an Englishman and as a right of an American citizen, we have a right to assemble into these bodies. However, the only way they become a legitimate body in a Republican form of government is it has to be done by the representatives, not by the sheriff, not by the coroner. We are a Republican form of government. So those who have the sovereignty to actually recognize the rights of the people is not the court. It is not the sheriff. It is our representatives. And so the representatives have an obligation to recognize the desire and the need of the people. Go read our petitions. This is why we lay this into these, that we demand that they allow us to form this assembly body, that we can actually start instructing them on what they need to do. And folks, yes, we have a right of instruction just like we have a right of petition. They're synonymous. A petition is the same thing as an instruction. It's just the formal name for the course of instructing. There is no formality of how that's to be done. You can do it orally. You can actually sit down and start instructing them. You have that right. But when you actually form a committee and you become a unified voice of the people of your county by this committee, then you actually have more, you know, the force or the will of the people being asserted by this committee, by this assembly. So, and I'm trying to make all this make sense to you, what and how we got to this point. And so in the 1760s, many of these men started forming these assemblies. As it got, you know, as it progressed more and more, it became more and more evident that it had to be done. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we have discovered as one of the names that actually came up in creating a committee in New York was Alexander Hamilton. So these men that understood the rights and the law, they started getting the people to start creating these assembly bodies. Because at that point in time, we didn't have a Republican form of government. So they had the right to create these representative assemblies. We already have a representative government, so we need them to actually, I'll just say, validate or allow us to actually assemble. If they don't allow us to assemble, then they're violating our rights, and we have to call them out and replace them. We don't have a king anymore that we have to fight all the way up the chain. We actually have local representatives who need to know their job. This is why we cover the content for you. Okay, so the Articles of Association started off with this set of words. We, His Majesty's most loyal subjects, the delegates of the several colonies, and then they go through this long list of colonies names, right? All 13 colony names. That's the Articles of Association. Now, in this very first petition, it starts off the same way. It says, we, Your Majesty's faithful subjects of the colonies of, and then they list all 13 colonies. In behalf of ourselves and the inhabitants of those colonies, we have been deputed, or actually we have been delegated and or selected kind of thing, they who have deputed us or delegated to us to represent them in a general Congress. So they're basically telling the king that the people have gotten so organized that they have created a general Congress of all of the states. We have gotten to this point of organization. Now, I want you to understand how this was done legitimately, because it was all built in the Magna Carta and the Glorious Bill of Rights. How divine were those documents in preparing the way to actually set the stage for the American Revolutionary War? In other words, these things were written as a part of the rights of the people to set the stage for us to evolve into this government that we have today. I can't tell you how profound this is. But when we come back, I'm going to pick up with the petition, and then we're going to go through this. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me get back to this, because getting through this, hopefully in the next half segment, half of the show, we can be successful, because this is a four-page document. So they kind of identified who they are and what the heck they're doing. They're exerting their rights in an organized body to oppose the king on stepping on our rights and not recognizing that we in the Americas are Englishmen who have these rights. And so this is how it goes. They start listing grievances. A standing army has been kept in these colonies ever since the conclusion of the late war, without the consent of our assemblies, and in this army, with a considerable naval armament, has been employed to enforce the collection of taxes. The authority of the commander-in-chief and under him of the brigadier generals has in time of peace been rendered supreme in all the civil governments in America. So now you start understanding when they go through this, you'll understand why some of these lines come in that there will always be a civil authority in charge. We will never be in martial law where a civil authority will not be in charge of those forces. Not a general, not somebody under the commander in chief. It will be a local civil authority, folks. Okay. The commander in chief of all your majesty's forces in North America has, in peacetime, been appointed governor of a colony. The charges of usual officers have been greatly increased, and new, expensive, and oppressive officers have been multiplied. In other words, the cost of paying to have them there because they're taxing them and making money off of them. And one of the things that they also talked about in the history was they would go into the homes and just steal what they wanted. It wasn't just paying taxes. They were taking property. And so the judges of admiralty and vice admiralty courts are empowered to receive their salaries and fees from the effects condemned by themselves. In other words, that's how they were doing it. They were condemning, if you had this kind of property, we're taking it. The officers of the customs are empowered to break open and enter our houses without the authority of any civil magistrate founded on legal information. The judges of courts of common law have been made entirely dependent on one part of the legislature for their salaries as well as for the duration of their commissions. Counselors holding their commissions during pleasure exercise legislative authority. Humble and reasonable petitions from the representatives of the people have been fruitless. The agents of the people have been discountenanced, and governors have been instructed to prevent the payment of their salaries. Assemblies have been frequently and injuriously dissolved, and commerce burthened with many useless and oppressive restrictions. We're seeing all of this today, folks. By several acts, you know, it's the boiling of the frog effect. It started a long time ago. It started in the 1800s, folks. The boiling of the frog began a long time ago as they started spending money that they had no authority and assuming powers. They had the middle of the 1800s when they created the Department of the Interior, or what they called the Department of Everything, or the Department of Home at the time. Anyway, let me get back to this. By several acts of Parliament made in the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th years of Your Majesty's reign. So in other words, Parliament started creating laws in 1785, because he started in the 1764, 5, 6, because he began his reign in 1760. And so of the Majesty's reign, duty are imposed on us for proposing of raising a revenue, and the powers of admiralty and vice admiralty courts are extended beyond their ancient limits, where our property is taken from us without our consent. The trial by jury in many civil cases is abolished. Enormous forfeitures are incurred for slight offenses. Vexatious informers are exempted from paying damages to which they are justly liable, and oppressive security is required from owners' land. They are allowed to defend their rights. Both houses of Parliament have resolved that the colonists may be tried in England for offenses alleged to have been committed in America by virtue of a statute passed in the 35th year of Henry VIII, and in the consequences thereof attempts have been made to enforce that statute. A statute was passed in the 12th year of Your Majesty's reign directing that persons, so that would be 1772, that persons charged with committing any offense therein described in any place out of the realm may be indicted and tried for the same in any shire or county within the realm, whereby the inhabitants of these colonies may, in sundry cases or in a variety of cases, by that statute made capital, be deprived of a trial by their peers of their vicinage. In other words, these common law rights that they had as Englishmen were just being completely stepped on. They were literally living under arbitrary rule and oppressive types of laws and tyranny. In the last session of Parliament, an act was passed for blocking up the harbor of Boston, another empowering the governor of Massachusetts Bay to send persons indicted for murder in that province to another colony or even to Great Britain for trial, whereby such offenders may escape legal punishment. A third for altering and character or chartered constitution of governments in that province, and a fourth for extending the limits of Quebec, abolishing the English and restoring the French laws, whereby great numbers of British freemen are subject to the latter, and establishing an absolute government and the Roman Catholic region throughout those vast regions that border on the westerly and northerly boundaries of the free Protestant English settlements, and a fifth for the better providing suitable quarters for officers and soldiers in His Majesty's service in North America. If you understand, you know, all of these complaints, all of these grievances, they're laying out the importance of why they wanted that Bill of Rights and why the Federalists were saying we don't need it because they don't have the power to do these things. They can't make arbitrary laws. And today, folks, even though they can't make arbitrary laws, we have been bamboozled and indoctrinated into believing they can do anything they want. This is all the color of law. This is all a facade that they've created. That's why that debt is fraud. As you start realizing that they have no authority to be doing these things, the debt is fraud. To a sovereign who glories in the name of Britain, they just spell it differently here, the bare recital of these acts must, we presume, justify the loyal subjects who fly to to the foot of his throne and implore his clemency for protection against them. From this destructive system of colony administration adopted since the conclusion of the late war have slowed those distresses, dangers, fears, and jealousies that overwhelm your majesty's dutiful colonists with affliction, and we defy our most subtle and inveterate enemies to trace the unhappy differences between Great England and these colonies. Great Britain and these colonies from an earlier period or from other causes than war has assigned. Had they proceeded on our part from a restless levity of temper, unjust impulses of ambition, or an awful suggestion of seditious persons, we should merit the opprobrious, this is an interesting word, opprobrious, meaning scornful, terms frequently bestowed on us by those we revere, but so far from promoting innovations, we have opposed them and can be charged with no offense unless it be one to receive injuries, be sensible of them. Had our Creator been pleased to give us existence in a land of slavery, the sense of our condition might have been mitigated by ignorance and habit. But thanks to be the Lord, adorable goodness, we were born the heirs of freedom and ever enjoyed our rights under the auspices of your royal ancestors, whose family was seated on the British throne to rescue and secure a pious and gallant nation from the paupery and despotism of superstitious and explorable tyrants. Your Majesty, we are confident, justly rejoices that your title to the crown is thus founded on the title of your people to liberty, and therefore we doubt not, but your royal wisdom must approve the sensibility that teaches your subjects anxiously to guard the blessing they received from divine providence and thereby to prove the performance of that compact which elevated the illustrious House of Brunswick to the imperial dignity it now possesses, because that's where the king came from. The apprehensions of being degraded into a state of servitude from the preeminent rank of English freemen, while our minds retain the strongest love of liberty and clearly foresee the miseries preparing for us and our posterity, excites emotions in our hearts which, though we cannot describe, we should not wish to conceal, feeling as men and thinking as subjects in the manner we do, silence would be disloyalty. This is almost like the Declaration of Independence. It's basically a huge plea that goes unanswered. By giving this faithful information, we do all in our power to promote the great objects of your royal cares, the tranquility of your government, and the welfare of your people. Duty to your majesty and regard for the preservation of ourselves and our posterity, the primary obligations of nature of society, command us to entreat your royal attention as your majesty enjoys the signal distinction of reigning over freemen, we apprehend the language of freemen cannot be displeasing. Your royal indignation, we hope, will rather fall on those designing and dangerous men who, daringly interposing themselves between your royal person and your faithful subjects, and for several years past incessantly employed to dissolve the bonds of society by abusing your majesty's authority, misrepresenting your American subjects, and prosecuting the most desperate and irritating projects of oppression, have at length compelled us by the force of accumulated injuries too severe to be any longer tolerable to disturb your majesty's repose by our complaints. interesting how the manners or the correctness, you know, their eloquence in speaking. It's interesting. These sentiments are exhorted from hearts that much more willingly would bleed in your majesty's service. Yet so greatly we have been misrepresented that a necessity has been alleged of taking our property from us without our consent. Quote, to defray the charge of the admission of justice to support the civil government and the defense protection and security of the colonies, close quote. But we beg leave to assure your majesty that such provisions has been and will be made for defraying the two first articles as has been and shall be judged by the legislatures of the several colonies, just and suitable to their respective circumstances, and for the defense, protection, and security of the colonies, their militias, if properly regulated, as they earnestly desire may immediately be done, would be fully sufficient, at least in time of peace, and in case of war, your faithful colonists will be ready and willing, as they ever have been when you constitutionally required to demonstrate their loyalty to your majesty by exerting their strenuous efforts in granting supplies and raising forces. I got to pause here and just kind of help you emphasize the importance of having a well-regulated militia. We talk about this all the time, that it's not a right to bear arms, it is a responsibility to be a well-regulated militia, that we have to have arms, and that those arms should be coming from the federal government. And we have to be clamoring to say, where are our effective arms in defending these states, these counties, this union from all of the enemies from within and without? And being able to do our job as a part of the militia. Folks, this is a responsibility, not a right. Or they go hand in hand. Because with a right comes responsibility. With a right comes action. In other words, we have to stand and demand that we have this responsibility. Not that we have the guns, that we have a well-regulated militia, because that is what's necessary for a free state to sustain itself. Anyway, moving on. Yielding to no British subjects in affectionate attachment to your majesty's person, family, and government, we too dearly prize that privilege of expressing that attachment by those proofs to which we honorably to the prince who receives them and to the people who give them ever to resign it to anybody of men upon earth. Had we been permitted to enjoy in quiet the inheritance left us by our forefathers, we should at this time have been peaceably, cheerfully, and usefully employed in recommending ourselves in every testimony of devotion to your majesty and of veneration to the state from which we derive our origin. But though now exposed to unexpected and unnatural scenes of distress by a contention with that nation on whose parental guidance on all important affairs we have hitherto with family, loving, devoted, there you go. So with devotion, with love, reverence, constantly trusted, and therefore can derive no instruction in our present unhappy and perplexing circumstances from any former experience, yet we doubt not the purity of our intentions and the integrity of our conduct will justify us in the grand tribunal before which all mankind must submit to judgment. We ask for peace, liberty, and safety. We wish not a diminution of the prerogative, nor do we solicit the grant of any new right in our favor. Our royal authority over us and our connection with Great Britain we shall always carefully and zealously endeavor and support and maintain. Filled with the sentiment of duty to your majesty and affection to the parent state, deeply impressed by our education and strongly confirmed by our reason, and the anxious to evince the sincerity of these dispositions, we present this petition only to obtain redress of grievances and relief from fears and jealousies occasioned by the system of statutes and regulations adopted since the close of the late war for raising a revenue in America, extending the power of courts of admiralty and vice admiralty, tying persons in Great Britain for offenses alleged to be committed in America, affecting the province of the Massachusetts Bay, and altering the government and extending the limits of Quebec, by the abolition of which system the harmony between Great Britain and these colonies, so necessary to the happiness of both and so ardently desired by the latter, and usually intercourses, will be immediately restored. In the magnanimity and justice of your majesty and parliament, we confide for a redress of our other grievances, trusting that when the causes of our apprehensions are removed, our future conduct will prove us not unworthy of the regard we have been accustomed in our happier days to enjoy. For appealing to that being who thoroughly searches the hearts of his creatures, we solemnly profess that our counsels have been influenced by no other motive than a dread of impending destruction. Now, what I need to go back here, because they're talking about this affinity, and they talk about the insertion of the courts of admiralty and vice admiralty. And this is basically an abolition. This is a removal of their common law rights as Englishmen. Folks, you don't have common law courts today. Your courts will tell you that they are common law courts, but they're not. There's no such thing as the right delegated to your government to provide a court for marriage. In other words, the state court, go look at your state constitution. Does the state constitution establish admiralty courts as the legal system of your state? No, but they have actually brought in admiralty courts and civil law. They have obviated common law, because common law is not a law, and the common law courts are not a court where barristers and esquires actually, you know, rule the day amongst the jurists who, you know, the pompous jurists of black robes. Common law courts is where we the people receive justice, where we the people have a right to represent ourselves and articulate our cases before a jury of our peers. The concept that a judge controls the jury, instructs the jury, and overrides the verdict of a jury is not common law. This is why I have appealed and appealed to lawyers to please, so patriotic lawyers, would you please write a book to help everybody understand that Blackstone's commentaries don't fly here. His commentaries were regarding common law under a monarchical theocracy, under our hybrid constitutional republic, and this government legal system that we've delegated to them with very finite powers. We have a right to have common law courts to where we can obtain justice over our properties, over our differences, over controversies. And as the Constitution guarantees, the 7th Amendment in the Constitution, as well as the 14th Amendment, which appeals this right, which basically applies this right to the states, that in controversies greater than $20, the right to a trial by jury shall be preserved. Folks,
your legal system has been stolen from you. And this happened a long time ago and had been a methodical exercise of obfuscation, and it has been a methodical evolution of basically them seizing full control and making money off of we the people. So the courts making sure that, you know, everybody in the, you know, in the game gets their fair share. That's why lawyers never get hurt. Lawyers always get paid, and they make sure they get their pound of flesh out of you. We have a legal system that serves the judiciary. And actually, this is why in my book, or in Why Counties Matter Most, we prove to you that we have a judiciary form of government. Let me get into the last of this. Now, the final two paragraphs. Permit us then, most gracious sovereign, in the name of all your faithful people in America, with the utmost humility to implore you for the honor of Almighty God, whose pure religion our enemies are undermining, for your glory, which can be advanced only by rendering your subjects happy and keeping them united, for the interest of your family depending on adherence to the principles that enthroned it, for the safety and welfare of your kingdoms and dominions threatened with almost unavoidable dangers and distresses, that your majesty, as the loving father of your whole people connected by the same bands of law, loyalty, faith, and blood, through dwelling in various countries, will not suffer the transcendent relation from by these ties and be further violated in uncertain expectations of effects that it attained never can compensate for the calamities through which they must be gained. We therefore most earnestly beseech your majesty that your royal authority and interposition may be used for our relief, and that a gracious answer may be given to this petition, that your majesty may enjoy ever felicity through a long and glorious reign over loyal and happy subjects, and that your descendants may inherit your prosperity and dominions till time shall no more is and always will be our sincere and fervent prayer. And so they signed it, and it went off and was delivered to the king. Now, the king, I don't think, ever made a trip to the United States. There was many a time where the throne never actually, you know, went out amongst the commonwealths and amongst the colonies of Britain. In other words, they were too good to do those things. We look at how we evolved from this, and I actually gave a presentation on the historical significance of the legal system and how it evolved in Britain. And you can see here how the commentaries, because when the commentaries were written by Blackstone, this was the time when they were being published, where he was directly violating those commentaries. And so these were the things that helped everybody understand, one, their rights, what they needed to do, what they had to do. Folks, your campaign begins today. We have to start demanding our rights, and we have to demand a constitutional government. We have to demand that government can do no more than those powers delegated, and contain them and get them contained once again. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process,
process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.